Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great Tuesday, everybody, to you. The day before National Letter of Intent Day for college football. Everything is rolling tomorrow morning early. Yes, you still need a fax machine in this day and age because you still have to fax in the letter of intent. It is amazing that you can still need that in this particular, but that's the way it is at this particular time. So that will be tomorrow. That'll be the big story. We'll have comments from James Franklin on the show tomorrow. That way you can get a feel as to how he feels about the recruiting class they were able to sign. Today, Andrew Callahan is going to join us. We'll talk about the Patriots videotaping staff meetings for the suit. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a different tape. But taping the Bengals sideline. Why would any, and not even the Bengals tape their own sideline? And we'll hear from him. Also coming up today, we'll have Ryan Snyder on recruiting and Neil Coulong today. So, Matt, it is an active day here at the broadcast facility of Champions.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, a lot to talk about. I like some of the guys that hopefully Penn State will sign tomorrow. We'll have plenty of coverage about that. And I'll be curious what Andrew thinks, too, as far as what's transpired with this whole video controversy. And we do have the audio, too, from Fox that aired on Sunday from Jay Glazer that kind of really got this thing sparked a little bit more than what it was, say, last week.
So let's hear a little bit of that. This is what aired on Fox leading into the game. We believe we have it.
And this is a piece you're filming on your advanced scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I don't see the advanced scout in this footage.
No, it's not. We were trying to get some field perspective. It's my bad.
That's not the field.
That's why you would think you could take that.
I didn't know. But I can delete this right here for you.
Damage is done, my friend.
No, it isn't, because we delete it.
Once again, see, it's gone.
It's gone.
22 yards line, 29 yards on the punt.
I can't get that.
29 yards.
There's no way I can get that footage back. I'm being honest with you. And I don't have a computer to even put it anywhere. Once this card, that's it.
Yeah, I don't see the advance scout in any of this video they're shooting.
Whoops.
There you go. When you say, I didn't know, that means you knew right off the bat there without even getting into the nuts and bolts of this.
I mean, first of all, let's get to the comical part. It's the Bengals.
Exactly right. The Bengals stink. Listen, I get the Patriots have had their issues this year on offense, but come on.
Wow. First of all, if you are, now I want to flip this to the Bengals now for a second. If you're the Bengals, why did you say yes to this? You have to approve credentials to do it.
And they were approved. Right. Yep. They were approved and then they were credentialed.
I mean, you say yes to this to the Atlanta Falcons. Hey, you don't say yes to the New England Patriots because of past history, right? I mean, past history would tell you So let's start with this. Don't you say no?
No, we're not going to allow that.
Because of who it is? I mean, I'm just asking the question. I mean, if it's the Philadelphia Eagles coming in, you don't even think, yeah, the Eagles will be fine. They'll do it right. Right? But you say yes to the Patriots? I'm sorry, but that lacks complete common sense to me. Now, I realize you're trying to I realize you're trying to be accommodating to your, quote, brethren in the league, but holy cow. To me, that's an automatic no. At least that's my opinion. I think it's an automatic no. That you would say, nah, we're not going to let you guys do that. We just, you know, and because you don't want to babysit them, right? I mean, part of that is you feel like with the Patriots, you have to babysit them because you're just not sure, right? Oh, well. That's crazy. So we'll talk to Andrew about that from the Boston Herald. Wow. And good job by Jake Lazor, by the way.
Definitely.
For getting that out there. I deserve a lot of credit for that. Tomorrow is National Letter of Intent Day. That's why we'll talk with Ryan Snyder. Penn State did have one defection, quote, you know, a decommitment right before the weekend. And to be honest with you, even Ryan was surprised by it. So Penn State has, instead of 28, it looks like 27 going into this one. And, you know, it's because of the numbers and the counting and the past and so forth as to how you put this together so that you have more than 25. There's ways to work the numbers. And they have the, it's interesting that at the top six in the 24/7 recruiting rankings, I know Ryan works for Rivals, but let's take the 24/7 recruiting rankings. The top six each have a five star, with Clemson having five of them, I believe. Outside of the top six, the only other ones that have five stars happen to be Oregon and Washington at 15 and 16. They have one each. It's kind of an odd dynamic. Now, part of it's location. And some of these five stars that they have, actually, there are a few of them from California, which then brings up, why is USC so far down in the recruiting ranks with all of these tremendous talented players on the coast? And I think that's going to be five stars are interesting. Everybody gets locked in on a five-star talent. And let's face it, you see Micah Parsons, and you can see why you get locked in on a five-star talent. It's the development of the talent that means so much once you get it. Mike is an interesting proposition. He is a five-star athlete in every way, shape, and form. He was asked, essentially, on this level to change positions, to play a position that he was not familiar with on an everyday basis, linebacker. Instead of playing defensive end or any of the offensive positions he can play, they asked him to play linebacker. They felt he had the size, the speed, the capability to do it. To the credit of Micah Parsons, Micah Parsons embraced it. Micah Parsons did everything he had to learn it. Micah Parsons is now applying that, and it gets better every game out because his instincts get better and better and better.
because he has worked so hard. He's done a lot of film study, and he has a five-star attitude to go with his five-star talent, and he has five-star learning ability to go with his five-star talent, and five-star work ethic to go with his five-star talent. But what also helps is that he has a five-star coach in Brent Pry at linebacker, somebody that he has been very willing to listen to. Player development means a lot. It means a lot. And I think that, you know, as time goes, Parsons turned in a first-team All-American year. 101st first-team All-American in the history of Penn State football. And to have changed spots like he has from high school to now, that shows you he's a five-star in more than just talent. There'll be a lot of pressure on the guys that are five-stars. I mean, there always is going to be pressure on a five-star guy because there's going to be a perception you are a five-star guy. You'd better live up to it. But you also can have great teams with a lot of fours and threes. Well, this recruiting class has a lot of fours and threes in it. Lots of fours and threes. It's now the development, because when you get onto that practice field, I can tell you right now, when you get onto that practice field, for the vast majority of the players out there, it is the first time in their life they are lining up on an everyday basis against comparable talent. First time in their lives. Right? I'm not going against the small, can't-run corner anymore. That guy is one of the top recruits in the country playing corner. I got to beat him. He's going to make me better, but I better work harder in my life to beat him, because now I'm going to try and make him better. Can you do it? I'm a five-star offensive tackle. That's a four-star defensive end over there that has played a couple of years. I have never lined up against one of those before. And that's how the cycle goes. That's where player development comes in. That's where competition comes in. That's the ability to make yourself better because the guy over there is better. Or you're getting pushed by somebody who, by the way, is also a four-star guy that's behind you, that has a great work ethic, and that person's going to push me. It all comes into play. Once you get on that practice field, you start from the no-star spot. You now have to earn your spot. We will take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us back on the show today. Andrew Callahan, then Ryan Snyder on recruiting, and then Neil Coulong on the Steelers. Duck mania is over. It's over. Duck mania, done. I mean, it was really a riot when the suit came in one day dressed like, you know, in a duck suit. Because you know how, like, he's a bandwagon jumper. In fact, we were at the holiday party last year, and I said, why are you limping? He said, I jumped off a bandwagon and sprained my ankle. It's just, you know how he is, man.
Yes.
So now he's been wearing duck suits and things like that. He threw four interceptions. The Duck will get the start against the Jets this week. For the Steelers, the playoffs actually officially begin Sunday.
Yep. They have to win out now.
Their first playoff game is Sunday. They now are in a keep winning mode. And here's the problem they're going to have now. Every game that they go into from this point forward, the other team will have the better quarterback. That's a big problem. They'll play the Jets, Sam Darnold. Darnold may not be the greatest quarterback on the planet, only in his second year in the league and so forth, but he's better than what you are starting. Right? Then Lamar Jackson. Enough said. I don't think we have to go any further with that conversation. And say the Steelers do win and make the playoffs. You've got to face somebody else who has a better quarterback. It's not this kid's fault, by the way. It's not his fault. It's just a fact of life.
The one benefit the Steelers may have, though, Steve, is if that Week 17 matchup with Baltimore, if the Ravens sit their starters, because they have a chance to clinch everything this weekend with a win.
Yeah, except I think you got to be smarter than that. I think if I'm advising somebody, I would play them the first half, and I would play them the first series of the second half, then I'd pull them. I think we've seen in the past that people that have sat their starters in the last weekend have then struggled in the playoffs because, it's believe it or not, you can have too much time off.
That's fair.
I mean, you can actually have too much time off. It's interesting about too much time off. Every team I've ever been around, and I've been around a lot of them in my life, the first practice after any kind of break, do you know how bad that practice is? I mean, now it's not a game, it's a practice. But the first practice, now in the second practice, oh, okay, now you get back to doing things the way you need to do and so forth. But, oh, gee, I mean, if we were to ask Greg Wetzel or Dave Ritchie, you know, anybody that's coached, I bet they would tell you the same thing. The first practice back after any kind of break, oh, let's just get through this. Then the second practice, now, okay, now you kind of worked out the kinks the first day. Well, it's the same thing with games. Sometimes you can have too much time off in between games where you're just not in a game rhythm, because what's going to happen is, okay, you missed that game. All right, that's one. Okay, that's good. That's fine. But then what happens the second week? Oh, that's right. You're not playing again. Now you don't play for 3 weeks. And sometimes it takes a little bit to work that out. That's why I think that... Let's go back to, you know, the Giants, of course, had the two big runs to championships, right? And what's interesting is that the Giants were the team that had to win their way in at the end. I remember the Giants, when they won the first Super Bowl over the Patriots, the third overall, but their first one in this century. They had that meaningless game against the Patriots at the end of the year, where the Patriots were trying to complete a 16-0 season. I remember how the Giants took them to the wire. It was the night of the Alamo Bowl. That's why when I got back to the hotel room, I'm watching the highlights. That game actually made the Giants better for the playoffs. They went right into the playoffs and just kept on going. To me, there's something to that. All right, we'll take a break. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Andrew Callahan from the Boston Herald in just a few moments. Patriots had a later... media availability today, so Andrew's going to get to us in just a few minutes. Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com, close to putting a bow on this early signing period. There really should not be any changes between now and tomorrow morning when I walk into the Lash Building. And the other part, too, is we'll have Neil Kulong on the Steelers. Speaking of a bow, the bow is now off Duck Hodges. Duck, done. There you go. Ah, the duck. The signing day press conference is tomorrow. It's at 3:15 in the Beaver Stadium Media Room. We're going to try and carry that live for you tomorrow. There'll be several other people besides James Franklin, Tyler Bowen, Terry Smith, and Andy Frank. But obviously, the leadoff will be James Franklin. Then Bowl Media Day is actually on Friday. Bowl Media Day is Friday. And then we get into bowl prep. Now, it turns out the team's going to practice. Let's see. They're not practicing today. They're practicing tomorrow, Friday, traveling Saturday, then their normal Sunday practice, and then they're taking Monday off. And then they are practicing Tuesday, Wednesday. It's Christmas Day. They're practicing. They're practicing Tuesday, Wednesday, then Thursday, what they normally do, and then Friday they have their normal, and then Saturday's the game, and then we're all coming back Saturday night. So that's how it's going to work. That's how it's going to work. And it turns out because the game is a Saturday, you can then do your normal Saturday routine. So tomorrow will be about recruiting. And then Friday will be about the bowl game in terms of the press conferences. That's how it's going to work. Great to have you with us today. It is the calm, the lull before the storm. Matt Patricia is going to be retained by the Detroit Lions. Devlin Hodges is going to start for the Steelers at quarterback. And Cole Anthony is out 4 to 6 weeks after knee surgery for North Carolina basketball. It is one of the slower times. Let's see. Ohio State takes on Southeast Missouri tonight. Florida takes on Providence tonight. Let's see. Dayton's at home with UNT. That's North Texas. And North Florida's at Florida State tonight. So there'll be some college battle. Miami's playing Temple tonight. Washington is at home with Seattle tonight. So college basketball, a little bit more. Central Connecticut will play Dartmouth tomorrow morning at 11. I know that, Matt, you were very concerned about that. And
oh, of course.
You can put that on your calendar.
I will do that as we speak.
Really? NHL, Buffalo, Toronto tonight in the NHL, Ottawa, Tampa Bay, Nashville, and the Islanders at Barclays. Anaheim will take on the Flyers tonight. Columbus will be at Detroit at Little Caesars. Carolina at Winnipeg, Montreal at Vancouver, Minnesota at Vegas against the Golden Knights, and Arizona's at San Jose. And in the NBA tonight, what, the Knicks are playing. Oh, boy. Playing Atlanta. 19,000 people asking themselves why they went to the Garden to see that game. Brooklyn's at New Orleans, Orlando at Utah, Phoenix and the Clippers. Lakers play Indiana tonight. Sacramento is at Charlotte. There you go. Do we have Andrew all set? Looking to see if we have them all set or not. Once we have them, we will go from there. Yes, we do. And with that, we bring in the outstanding Andrew Callahan, who does such great work, covered Penn State football brilliantly, and now does so with the Boston Herald. Andrew, welcome. Great to have you back.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Good to be back with you.
Okay, now the latest one. Now, let's start with this part. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, why did you say yes to this?
In terms of just all the noise and the distraction of the scandal, or what
yeah,
are they saying?
Yeah, but
here?
Why? Okay, with all due respect to the Patriots organization, with all due respect, if the New Orleans Saints say we want to do a feature on this, I don't think twice about it. I let them do it. If the Patriots say they're going to do it, I think twice about it. Only because of reputation.
Well, I think this caught them by surprise because the game they filmed was in Cleveland. So they were credentialed through the Browns, but happened to set up right in front of the two Bengal scouts that were in attendance at the game back on December 8th.
So that's how it comes about. So that's how they do it. How damaging, or at least in terms of perception, is the what Jay Glazer aired on TV?
You know, I think it depends on your point of view. I think it speaks to a lot of, you know, honestly, what we see today. I mean, people get firmly entrenched in the original position that they had. And I think it's important to keep in mind that that was obviously provided to Jay Glazer by someone I would believe on the Cincinnati side, or at least on the league side, because reportedly that was an 8-minute video cut down to 45 seconds. And I think 45 seconds, probably, of course, for the purposes of TV, right? They've only got so much time in a 1-hour pregame show. But the beginning and end of that is the Patriots employee saying, we can delete this. And then the Bengals employee replying, the damage is done. So that is a lasting image, and that was the image that was wanted by whomever provided this to Jay Glazer. Now, it obviously doesn't sound good for the Patriots, and as we know from past NFL scandals, specifically, you know, domestic violence issues, it's always worse when there's a video that's released. But in my mind, I think this really just gave life to what had already been reported, that they were confronted in the press box, you know, asked to delete it, and then gave up the tape or the SMS card, whatever you want to call it, as soon as NFL security arrived. So this is, it obviously, you know, you don't have to rely on theater of the mind as you're reading something or listening to it. Once you see it, it feels more real, but in reality, this is what had transpired. It was just a different medium through which it was conveyed and reported.
To be honest with you, from the outside looking in, do I really think for a moment that the Patriots brass said, I can't wait to see this tape? For the most part, I bet Belichick didn't even know they were doing it.
Yeah, and that's what he said. He's been consistent all along that this was very separate from the football operations. They had no knowledge of or involvement with the production crew. And I can tell you, you know, in my year and a half covering the team, they've been doing this online documentary series, and they've also never sent a film crew to any other stadium this season. So this is the latest in a series of, you know, installments where they've done scouting. Now this was advanced scouting. They've done the video department last year at the AFC Championship game. You know, they've done different areas. And it really just comes down to, I think, probably the wrong place at the wrong time. But, you know, it gets extended, and there's really no more investigation to be had. I think we're all just kind of waiting on, you know, whether the NFL wants to be seen as kind of bringing the hammer down because it is the Patriots, which generates the whole story, or do they just want to say this is a mistake and then be seen as kind of maybe letting them off easy. But, yeah, Belichick has been consistent all along from the get-go, and they've been more forthright than they have in any other previous scandal that this is what happened, but they're insistent that it was separate from anything related to football operations.
I want to get to the team now. When you look at the Patriots' wideouts, Edelman's Edelman, I got that, and that's what Brady's looking for, a guy that understands where the open windows are. How tough has it been for him to operate because he doesn't have enough guys like Edelman to understand where open windows are, like pass receivers?
Yeah, it's a very good question because it has been a rotating cast dating all the way back to training camp, and they had some veterans in, you know, guys who I think people probably don't even know about, Dontrell Inman, who had a stint with the Chargers and Colts and had shown an ability to maybe, oh, he could step up, or a Maurice Harris, so lower level veteran guys that they basically threw everything at the wall, saw what stuck, and nothing really has. So it's been frustrating for Brady, though, you know, Brady, while largely immune to criticism up here, definitely deserves his fair share of the blame. And, you know, I do a report card every week, which is my newest version of a film breakdown, and he got a C last week because he'd only had one game previous with fewer than 54% of his passes completed and less than 130 yards. And that was 10 years ago. So he's at an all-time low, but it definitely has been frustrating because you don't know who that number two receiver is going to be. It was supposed to be Mohamed Sanu, but he's been banged up as of late.
Has there been any thought, for example, about taking a look at James White? And maybe making him a wideout, but making him a slot guy or something.
Yeah, he's essentially served as a de facto slot guy because he's their second leading receiver when you're going by total receptions, and he's often that check down option or on screens. You saw they scored their first touchdown against Cincinnati on a 23-yard screen. So he served that purpose for a while, even going back to last year, but it's certainly not their ideal scenario where you have a running back as your second leading receiver. So he's certainly, you know, one of their five most effective skill players regardless of position on the offense. So that's why you see him featured as such. But, you know, they ideally would say, hey, we've got a number two receiver after Edelman, but they haven't really been able to find one unless Sanu or their first round pick, N'Keal Harry, really steps up and relieves White of some of that pressure as a pass catcher.
Tom Brady would never say this, but do you wonder sometimes if he's lacking trust in certain guys?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, you see it in, you know, certain areas where, and honestly, historically, it takes more than a year for him to develop trust with guys, whether they're new veterans or rookies especially. But, you know, he puts it in ways of dependability and accountability and consistency. So, you know, that has to do with the reads and seeing the play the same way he does because they have several different option routes, which aren't unique to this offense, but they're much more heavily reliant on them because their goal each week is to change their offensive identity to be the worst nightmare for the opponent's defense in whatever style that they play. So that requires reading zone versus man and different leverages. So that's just a lot to handle for a rookie who might have come from a simplistic offensive system. And if you mess up enough, Brady just doesn't trust you outright and says, I don't have time because, you know, we only have so many weeks left, and he just doesn't look your way. Perfect example being his final throw against Kansas City. They lose here against the Chiefs 10 days ago. Jacoby Myers, who's an undrafted rookie, who's played okay, wide open over the middle, but instead against the blitz, he threw to Edelman, who was covered, because he just trusted Edelman more than the rookie Myers.
You get to watch Stephon Gilmore on that corner all the time. How good is he?
He's been outstanding. I think he's probably the best NFL corner that I've seen in my lifetime, which, again, doesn't cover as far back as Deion Sanders in his prime, but as Darrell Revis. I think Darrell Revis in 2009, 2010 with the Jets was probably the only better corner I've ever seen play, because it's not only that he's just handling opposing number one wideouts every single week, but he's leading the league with six interceptions. He's got two pick sixes. They're different body types of these receivers. I mean, he shut out Amari Cooper, albeit in a rainstorm here at Gillette Stadium a couple weeks ago, but no one does that in a league where passing and scoring is at an all-time high. So for him to do that in this era against this level of competition, I think there's a reason he should be Defensive Player of the Year, and that's just one of many that you can make an argument for why he probably deserves that award in a couple more weeks.
What does it tell everybody about the longevity of Dante Hightower?
You know, it's a credit to him. We talked about this with him last year about what he's changed, because, you know, he's been banged up, had seasons where he's played eight games and then even if he was six, and last year with 15, he missed one game earlier this season. And he's not your prototypical middle linebacker in that he's running sideline to sideline, but he's done a lot more, some of the, honestly, the Tom Brady method, a lot more pliability, some small muscle group, you know, massages and attention, as opposed to just constant heavy lifting, you know, squatting and bench press and things like that. So, you know, he's only 28. He feels longer, but, you know, the best thing about Dante Hightower, whose stats are, you know, solid, but not, you know, Pro Bowl level, is that he just comes up in the biggest games for them and makes a lot of checks and adjustments at the line, calling out plays or putting a defensive lineman in position that gives the Patriots an edge, because he's one of the smartest players on the smartest team in the league.
You see, that's the part. I mean, the Patriots have been able to look at people and say, okay, shelf life is here. We're going to move on. I mean, the Patriots do put the business in business. Yet he stays there year in and year out. That tells me something about what Belichick thinks of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also someone that, you know, you look at a lot of the veterans they brought in, they have, you know, a couple traits common to them. They're smart players, which we just talked about, but they're also very versatile. So in college, even dating back to his days at Alabama, he played on the edge, he played in the middle, he played a little bit outside linebacker, and he'll be on the edge here in New England along with Kyle Van Noy, who shares some of those same traits. But, you know, that, again, we talked about the offense having this plan to be, you know, a different identity week to week. The defense is much the same way. You can't do that without players like Hightower. And you can see, you know, whether it's Belichick's words and his statements in press conferences, or just the fact that, you know, Dante Hightower accounts for one of their highest cap hits on the team. They respect him, they value him, and really couldn't be playing this type of defense without him.
All right, I've got to ask you about the Patriots. Obviously played the Ravens won, but it allowed you to see Lamar Jackson and how he plays. Even against a defense like the Patriots, what problems does Jackson bring to the table, but also that style bring to the table, because they are the one team that plays differently than everybody else?
Yeah, and that's a great point. I think probably the closest equivalence would be in the college level, teams that have to get ready for Navy, right? Like, it's an entirely new attack. It's triple option.
Right.
It's not quite to that extreme here with the Ravens, but it is very different in that they're going to play heavier personnel, a lot more two tight ends, two running backs, sometimes even three tight ends. And so it's different from the rest of the league, which is primarily playing three wide receivers. Then you add in the different read elements to the running game, where Lamar Jackson's, you know, much like you would see on a Saturday at State College, you know, the quarterback taking the ball, reading a defender, and then handing it off based on his read, or keeping it and going to the opposite way. So there are a lot of different elements on a macro and micro level. The other part about that is, even if you defend all those different things very well and you're sound fundamentally and you get a one-on-one tackler versus Lamar Jackson, he's one of the best athletes in the entire world. Forget the NFL. He is a dynamic athlete. You saw it at Louisville. He's only gotten better at Baltimore. So you get that one-on-one, and he can run by you. He can shake you. He might even lower a shoulder. So he's just difficult to handle, and it's hard to get the numbers advantage you would want based on the offense that they're playing, because they're playing the same numbers game. And they can, because they have a running quarterback. And, oh, by the way, that quarterback, again, is one of the best athletes in the world. So they've got a right fit around him, a different scheme, and it's just really a perfect storm for Baltimore this season.
See, he's the one quarterback in the NFL that puts the back seven in peril, where they're sitting there and like, okay, I'm covering, but should I come up? And he puts them in peril.
His man coverage is real tough against him, which, again, you talked about, they lost to the Patriots. Patriots play more man coverage than everyone, and you can't have so many backs turned to him all at the same time.
Andrew, I know you have more work to do. We appreciate the time you gave us here today. Appreciate it very much.
No problem, Steve. You have a good one.
You too. Andrew Callahan, Boston Herald, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, Rivals.com. We'll update football recruiting tomorrow morning. The machines will all be fired up to receive those letters of intent. And they'll be announced one by one tomorrow. I'm always interested to see which one I end up with, or a couple I end up with along the way. I couldn't do it last year because I was, I'm trying to think, I guess I was in Pittsburgh. Was I in Pittsburgh that day? I was on that extended road trip, Pittsburgh to Alabama. And so I missed it. So the last guy I announced was Pat Freiermuth. He's also never forgotten that either. But that'll be tomorrow. Look, this is a huge decision. Now, look, I know we're in the world of transfers now. I understand that. The transfer rules are so liberal now. When you look at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, if the Heisman Trophy ceremony is the same as the national semifinals. You're looking over there, Joe Burrow transfer, Justin Fields transfer, Jalen Hurts transfer. Now, Jalen Hurts got his degree, by the way, so let's give Jalen Hurts his props. It's really hard for me to lump Jalen Hurts in with everybody else because he stuck with his team. He hung in there. He got his degree. And then I think that allowed him the freedom to go out and do whatever he wanted. And he picked Oklahoma. So I kind of keep like Jalen Hurts a bit separate. Now, Joe Burrow was in a spot where I don't know if he would have won the job down there. Justin Fields. Yeah, everybody knows that, you know, the situation down there was a little bit different, and we'll leave it at that. But that's the era we're in. The guy that transferred in. One thing I always want to know when somebody transfers, why is the reason they transferred? It's always the question I always want to ask. You know, what was the reason for the transfer? And the kid may be perfectly a terrific young man. Terrific player, but didn't mesh with the staff. Sometimes that happens. It's going to be interesting. We look at the top 100 guys. How many of the top 100 are going to end up sticking it out for a minimum of 3 years? It's always interesting to see as time goes because we are in that era. Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com, Blue White Illustrated, next half hour. Neil Coulong, final half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Close out the year with a new car. And when you deal with Sunbury Motors. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.